morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and sitting from across from me in his regular seat.
In his regular seat, yes. My cousin Tino is over here, ready to be controversial.
Good. And who's this other guy here in this he's wearing a red sweatshirt, folks.
It's the vice president of an executive researcher. I don't know
what right.
Whatever
that's
my
senior,
title is.
Senior executive researher and producer.
Grand poobah of, Verde Valley Democrat.
You wanted to talk about an update on violence against police first before we start.
Yeah, last week we did the show on the police encounters and police shootings, and there was an article in the Verde Independent that this weekend that had a listing of the deaths by cops. And Arizona ranks fourth with, in the last 2.5 years, 93 shootings of individuals by police officers. And percentage-wise, we must lead the nation because by capita, because the states ahead and behind us, immediately behind us, are much higher population states.
Yeah.
Like New York and California. And
That's going to be an ongoing issue, which there's a lot of sides to. Today we wanted to talk about religious freedom and using religious freedom as a way to shield discrimination. Religious freedom in human history is a hugely mixed bag. The first declarations of religious tolerance go way back to, you know, somebody like Cyrus the Great in such and such BC. But and in Europe and in Asia and among all the religions, whether you're talking about Islam or Christianity, sometimes you'll have tolerance and respect for other religions and sometimes you won't. And it often in human history, it's been whether you had a king or a prince who thought it was useful to his government to include everybody in. When that prince dies or his kingdom is overrun by somebody else, the religious freedoms and tolerance that was there disappeared. So human history is a vagary of tolerance for other people's religions, and then that ending, and then it occurring somewhere else. It's an incredibly mixed bag.
Yeah, using language from Jonathan Cohen. This is a huge change in the legal landscape brought forth by the Republicans. This sort of sword against gays and lesbians and using religion to perpetrate it is a big change in American jurisprudence.
Right. One of Americans' innovations was the First Amendment. And I'm just going to read the relevant part of it. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or the prohibiting of the free exercise thereof. And the reason that law was needed, establishment religions, even in the American colonies, certain colonies had an established religion. And in Europe, there are established religions all over the place. In the Middle East, sometimes the established religions are tolerant of minority religions, and sometimes they're not. So the United States, when it was formed, and the Constitution, the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights, is Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And what that meant was you couldn't have an official religion.
And all the whack jobs, all the Republican whack jobs in Congress that want to have Christianity written into the law haven't read that part of the Constitution.
They missed the part because the clause, if you read it carefully, prohibits the government and government actions that unduly favor one religion over the other. So I think what you're seeing with certain fundamentalist Christian groups feeling persecuted is that their religion had a preference because of American history. And as that preference begins to fade or get more and more complicated, as we get more and more folks from all over the world with more and more different religions, they feel like they're being persecuted because their position as sort of the senior religion, the most important religion, is fading.
Or that's a good point.
At least there's a complex thing.
That's a big deal, that perception of, because I can't go anywhere on the internet without seeing some sort of Christian story, planted Christian story, about some sort of little girl or somebody with a Christian was persecuted in the United States.
It's a figment of Fox News Channel's imagination.
Yeah. I noticed
The fact is they have this war against Christianity, the war against Christmas, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Well, if there is one, it's being perpetrated by Christians because of the American population, of adult population, 78.4% call themselves Christians, and only 4.7% follow some other religion.
So it's a vast majority thing. I noticed the governor of Utah, Herbert, I think his last name is, and what he was saying was that the real people being persecuted in Utah were people who were against same-sex marriage, and that he knew of cases where people had been fired from their jobs for speaking up on their First Amendment rights saying they were against gay marriage. And so the press kind of came to him and said, well, give us an example of somebody. And Governor Herbert sort of faded from view. He couldn't come up with any. But there's, as Mike and Gary are saying, there was an attempt to say that discrimination is against the people who want to discriminate rather than the people getting discriminated against. And so the gay and lesbian folks came back. Well, we got dozens of cases where we can show you that our people have been persecuted for their sexual preference. You know, you come up with your cases, and of course he didn't do so. But it went over well. I mean, a lot of religious hatred and religious intolerance has always gone over well.
Well,
there's some of those vicious people in the world. In the South, were in favor of a race-based discrimination justified by religion.
As Gary said before the show, and as everybody at this table knows, and in the listening audience knows, that the religions that are most in danger of being persecuted at this moment are Muslims in the United States and atheists. These are the people that are really in trouble, have been for quite a while.
These are the most unpopular minorities. These are where the target is. It's always against minorities. It's very seldom against, you know, a vast majority of people. But the feeling of persecution is real. Now, the government, understand, the government and people of the United States have always regulated religion. I mean, there's zoning laws. You can't put a church in a certain place. You can't sacrifice people, you know. You can't violate civil law
except in Jerome,
in an egregious and crazy manner. The court has been, because the United States comes from a largely Christian background, the population, the court has been kind of divided. It doesn't let brand new Christian or any other religious symbols take a precedent in courthouses and places like that, but it seems to have left the ones that already that pre-exist to remain.
One of the most amusing things I think about the supposed war on Christianity is, I mean, there's all sorts of claims that Obama has banned prayer at military academies, and that he's ordered the removal of crosses from military cemeteries. These things were floating around in emails for years.
Sure, I've seen them.
His practicing Christianity is just a ruse and hiding his real Muslim character.
But one of the real amusing things is this whole furor over Ten Commandments monuments in courthouses and other public buildings. Mm. People don't realize the origin of those. Those were distributed around the country by Cecil B. DeMille in advance of the release of the movie The Ten Commandments in 1956. And so they were little more than a movie promotion.
A PR campaign.
So suddenly, no one ever questioned putting them up. And especially in the very religious-driven 50s.
Well, yeah.
But
especially in courthouses and government buildings, for God's sake.
But then when atheists and others began to, and people from other religions began to object, there's not even commonality on the order of the Ten Commandments by one
or to the translation varies from religion to religion.
So when they started complaining and started pulling them out, then people got all upset.
The government and hopefully American people are not supposed to unduly favor one religion over another. In other words, the government. This comes from this, what we were talking about earlier, this vast history of religious wars and persecution. If you want to read about it, folks, it's very easy to go on. The human history is filled with religious persecution and murders, and it's still going on. The real violence, the real persecution for religion, the real problem are mostly in the third world. They're in countries like Syria, where you have a division between some sects of Islam and Christians and Druze against the Sunni extremists. And it goes on and on and on.
As this religious freedom thing boils up in the United States, we have 21 states are proposing religious freedom laws. Now, some of them are backing off of those because of the fear of the language, that it is discriminatory, that it is a sword. The ACLU gentleman that argued before the Supreme Court said religious freedom should be not be a sword. It's supposed to be a shield. And that apparently is resonating, at least with some state legislators, as religious freedom laws work through their bodies. So some are slowing down, but when 21 states in such a short time mount this passage of laws to be discriminatory, that's a big deal in a place
one
with
the, one of the arguments, Mike, that they're using is that what they're doing is very similar to a 1993 law, law, called, I think it's a Religious Restoration Act, Gary.
RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Okay. So that was introduced by really far right wing anti-Christian people like Charles Schumer, who's Jewish, and Teddy Kennedy, who's Catholic. And it was used to protect, it was aimed at, the intention was to protect Native American religious sites. That's what it was about. And Native American religion. And where I come from in Oklahoma, the Native American church is a wide intertribal church. And they use peyote in their ceremony. And when I was growing up, they were terribly persecuted, and their religion was sort of secrety because they were using peyote. I met a Lakota woman who was absolutely in tears at the peyote being called a drug. For them, it's a sacrament. And what the 1993 law did was basically prevent the persecution of Native American religions like the Native American Church, which is as far as I know, a wonderful organization. They just have different ideas about what's sacred. And that's what it was about. It wasn't about discriminating against gay folks. It wasn't about, Christianity being persecuted. It was aimed at protecting some of the smallest religions in the country.
But they're using that as
they're using that, Mike, as a justification for the new laws.
Well,
the 21 laws that Gary and you are talking about are laws, and one of the arguments they'll come back, well, the federal government, Dennis, what we're doing is no different, but is different, Gary, right?
The problem is that there was a decision, I don't know the year, but it was in Oregon. There was a lawsuit between the Employment Division of Oregon and Smith. And the Supreme Court ruled that the RFRA The federal one did not apply to states and local governments. And so then there became a flurry of laws across the country in various states to make sure that it applied within the states. And so we have 21 state legislatures that have passed those laws. We have 11 states have RFRA-like provisions that have been provided by state court decisions. And then we have, in this past year, we've had 22 states introduce new versions of RFRAs in 22 attempts in 13 states. And the real problem that this is based on is the bad laws like the one in Indiana and the one that they tried to pass in Arizona, is that it would prohibit a governmental entity from substantially burdening a person's religious beliefs. Now, the issue with that, according to the ACLU, is that it's the anti-discrimination laws can only be instituted by governmental entities. So what these state laws are saying is that the federal government can't come in and tell us that we can't discriminate against gays or whoever else. And so that's the key clause in each of these bad versions of the law.
Why couldn't they discriminate for the same basis? They could discriminate against black folks. They could discriminate against Jews. They could not serve atheists. They could any minority religion. Now, understand that the darker side of religious history in the United States is the use of religion and calling on God to justify racial discrimination, to justify slavery. Entire religious groups like the Southern Baptists adopted a discrimination as an official religious policy. So that's the dark side of American history. A lot of the arguments you're seeing now come from the government's interfering with racial discrimination where it was claimed that it was being done on the basis of God said to go ahead and do it. And it reaches a kind of peak with a case, let's see, it's a Bob Jones case. So Bob Jones University is a far right-wing university. They didn't allow any black folks to come in. If you were black, you're not coming in. Meanwhile, they were a tax-exempt institution. So the case went all the way to the Supreme Court.
You're talking about the head of my English department at NAU years ago, obviously.
And the court ruled 8-1, and the main decision was by a conservative Chief Justice Warren Berger. And the court said the government has a compelling interest in not allowing religious institutions to discriminate, and they took away Bob Jones University's tax-exempt status. And that's where the feeling that Christianity is being persecuted, this campaign begins then. That's what sets off the far right. In fact, it's at least some of the people who led the far right say that's the decision, the fact that they believe that they're in order to avoid integration in the South, they set up hundreds and if not thousands of segregated schools. And so the attack on their segregated school system, which was really just denying them denying them tax exemption, they, according to some of the people involved in the Christian fundamentalist movement, the politicized part of it, because not everybody's a part of this thing, but begins with that more than abortion, more than anything else. That's the feeling of persecution, was that they weren't allowed to discriminate.
That's the scary part. Here's the fun part. And the fun part is the divide that this is causing in the GOP and the Republicans, because you got Coca-Cola, Atlanta based. You got Georgia considering a religious freedom law like the one in Indiana, like all the other ones that really is discriminatory against at least gays and lesbians and probably.
Let me ask you this: why else are they passing it, guys? Except that they want to discriminate against gays and lesbians. What's driving this thing? Is there any other possible theory? I don't none has
whatsoever.
Any reality.
But the division of the Republicans, that's a good question. The division of the Republicans is that you got business, you got Home Depot, you got Coca-Cola, you got many big businesses saying, please stay away from these laws. Any passage of any law that can be used as a sword of discrimination is we don't support. Now, a lot of business, because they have other stuff before the various legislators, including the one in Georgia, have been fairly silent. They've made statements, but they're not doing crusades against these laws.
Arizona's law only got vetoed by Brewer because of business reaction to it. Indiana's
Brewer or Ducey?
Brewer. And Indiana's law only got modified as a result of corporations complaining, and along with the
Arkansas.
The threats of boycotts from various groups across the country.
Yeah, it's a complex issue, but I think in some ways it boils down to why is this legislation being done? Because it's hard to see that there's any persecution of Christian churches. That doesn't mean that, if you have a religion that people don't like, they cannot like you, you know. I mean, if you're a Muslim and somebody doesn't like Muslims, they can say, I don't like Muslims. That's free speech. What they can't do is not serve you when you go into their restaurant because they think you're a Muslim. And a lot of times they can't tell who's a Muslim and who's a Sikh and who's whatever.
You constantly hear people on the right, on the religious right, talk about that the founders intended this to be a Christian nation. And they continue to use that and promote that. The reality is, we found out when we interviewed Michael Austin with his book, That's Not What They Meant About the Founding Fathers, that when the colonies were first established, each of the colonies had their own established religion. So you had a Church of England colony. You had a Quaker colony. You had
Baptist colony.
Yes, and in each of those colonies, there were taxes levied against all of the people living in the colony to support the established church. And the reason that when the U.S. was formed, the reason that it was written into the Constitution to prevent the establishment of a religion was it was the only way the colonies could get along. And in fact, many of the founding fathers, we have found out, were not traditional Christians. They were deists. In other words, they believed in a God, but they didn't believe in Christianity.
And some of them wanted to use religion like the Romans did. The Romans are persecuting Christians way back in the day, not because they care about Christianity one way or the other, but because Christians in the early days wouldn't salute the Roman gods that were part of creating a state. So when the Roman Senate decided somebody was a god or something, they wanted you to genuflect before this thing. You didn't have to believe anything at all. They didn't care what you believed. It was an affirmation of the state. And so this tradition goes down, and some of the founding fathers, like I believe George Washington, favored a sort of religion in that sense. And for example, he decided that, or his position was that you could still collect taxes to support churches, but the money couldn't go to one particular church. It had to go to all of them. Well, you can imagine, I mean, Washington's a great man, but that's a really, really terrible idea, because, like, how many churches are there, and how would you distribute the money, and how would you, which caused an absolute nightmare.
Exactly.
And so the best decision was the one that they made, was to separate the church and state. And there were, you know, people like Jefferson who believed that the separation should be absolute.
An extremely important provision. I don't believe we'd still be a whole country if we didn't have it. One of the things everybody's heard about, the photographer that refused to shoot the gay wedding. But I'm once again, I'm quoting from another article. This this happened in New Mexico. The famous case, gay couple photographer refused to take pictures at a same-sex marriage ceremony, which was not an official ceremony since same-sex marriage was illegal in New Mexico at the time. The photographer cited the state's religious freedom law as a defense. The state Supreme Court of New Mexico rejected that defense for a specific reason, and this is important. New Mexico's religious freedom law, the court said, only protected businesses from government action. It only protected businesses from government action. It didn't protect businesses from lawsuits by individuals and other private parties. This distinction is huge. And in legal world, it's going to be extremely difficult in practice to make this dichotomy as clear as the New Mexico Supreme Court did.
One point we should make, Mike, is that there is no right to force a religion to marry people that it disagrees with.
Right.
Now, you can discriminate against black folks. You can discriminate against anybody you want. You cannot have in your religion a mixed marriage where one person is one face, the other person is the other. You cannot marry gay folks if you don't want to do that.
So we're talking
as a religion.
So we're talking about government actions against
religion. As a religion, you can still legally discriminate in terms of what you're doing.
Absolutely.
As a religious
within
institution.
That religion.
Only as a religious institution. The minute the way the courts seem to be heading is the minute you open your doors for business, I open my door and say, "Come in and buy flowers from me." I'm a commercial enterprise. Once I do that, I'm not protected by being able to discriminate anymore because I've opened my doors to the public and I'm a commercial outfit. I'm not a religious organization. I don't know of anyone trying to force religions to marry people right or wrong, whether they're right or wrong, that they don't believe in doing it. I mean, in other words, you know, if your religion X and your church only marries people who belong to religion X, nobody's going to come and force you to support intermarriage. That's up to the religion.
That's important.
So nothing is happening with that.
We're talking about
commercial enterprises that open their door to the public. Now, I suppose if you were a private company somewhere, not a private company in the sense of ownership, but in the sense of, I don't know what, Gary, but once you're a public, then there's a problem with discriminating against people.
Yeah, as a business, once a business is allowed to discriminate freely against any group, where does it stop? As Mike pointed out, if these laws like the one in Indiana were allowed to run their course, they could be used against people of color. They could be used if I'm a Republican with a business, I could discriminate against. I could always ask if
no photographing. Democrats' weddings.
Yeah. Yes, I could always ask if.
Or
they
vice
were.
Versa. Vice versa. I'm a super liberal guy. Somebody comes in, conservative fundamentalists want to get married, and they want me to take the photographs of their ceremony and them for their. For their memories, and I say, I'm sorry, I just don't take pictures of Christian fundamentalists. I'm sorry, it's against my religion. I mean, anything is possible once you open this door, right?
As someone who was raised a Christian, I'm constantly amused by the attitude towards gays. Because the verses in Leviticus that they used to justify discriminating against gays also ban the eating of shellfish. They ban the wearing of two different fabrics at the same time. They ban eating the flesh of an animal with cloven hoofs. I mean, they ban divorce. You know, if you get divorced, then you should be stoned.
Well, back to religious freedom.
No. I mean, I think he's right, Mike. I mean, the justifications are taking what did Austin call it?
Highly selective.
Highly selective. He had a particular term from literature.
Proof texting.
Proof texting. So they're going through the whole Bible, and as far as I know, Jesus never said anything about gay marriage or homosexuality or anything
exactly.
at all. St. Paul railed against gays and also against sex in general. But that's another issue.
You mean Saul? Yeah, I want to do a We should do a Bible show. I'm ready. I'm ready for
the
Bible
show. I'm ready and able to do a Bible show.
I am ready for the Bible show.
We were all raised Catholic.
The Council of Nicaea. Oh, yes, exactly.
So if you want to listen to our religious upbringing for 45 minutes,
that library of arbitrarily decided texts that were put together by people with by 40 mostly men, people with political motives. I mean, there is no more political text than the Holy Bible.
I think what you see, folks, is most of the really reactionary stuff comes in when a religion is being threatened. So you'll have periods in medieval Islam where there'll be attacks on Christians and Jews, and there'll be a protected religion, but they'll also be discriminated against. And you're able to practice your religion. In fact, Muslims, there's periods where they would let people eat pork and drink wine. If you were a Christian, you could do all these things. You could celebrate your holidays. But you were also a second-class system and a second-class citizen. And what happened is that we don't second-class anybody based on the religion anymore, or we shouldn't, right?
My ancestors were driven out of France and Germany because they were Huguenot and didn't believe or didn't follow the teachings of the Catholic Church.
Why did you say they're driven out because of your ancestors?
So they had their land taken away. Many of them were killed, and they were dispersed across Europe and places that the Church couldn't reach.
So when you look at different countries in Southeast Asia, often Muslims are being persecuted, right? And if you look in the Middle East, it's often Shia grouping of Islam that's being persecuted by Sunnis. You get to Iran has theoretical laws, and this is what we see in history. And the great thing about the United States is keeping our laws real so that they actually work. Because if you look at all these countries and the United Nations and the U.S. government analysis of religious freedom in these countries is pretty good. They all have these laws saying there isn't any discrimination, everybody is protected, and they don't enforce it. So in Pakistan, there are these vicious attacks where they've killed hundreds of Shia Muslims, the Sunnis have, and blown up a church or killed almost 90 Christians. So they have the laws, but they're not enforced. And what the United States, it's what's important is that we, through our courts and through our support for our Constitution and for a sense of fairness and justice to everybody and to bring peace for everyone, actually practice these anti-discrimination measures that so much of the world has enacted. I mean, the United Nations has wonderful, wonderful human rights stuff, but all they do is monitor what countries do and criticize them because they have no power to do anything else. Here we have the law to protect us.
What some article, I'm going to quote again from an article. This is a shrinking minority. They want to make an anxious, shrinking minority. But polls show that most Americans support gay marriage and anti-discriminatory laws. The Andrew Cottleman, the John Paul Stevens Professor of Law at Northwestern University, said this: even if the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is on the books, and he's talking about Indiana, a state can still override a religious claim if it has a compelling interest. States, now Indiana doesn't have an anti-discrimination law. A lot of states do. If a state has anti-discrimination laws on the books, that makes the Religious Freedom Restoration Acts more actionable and less discriminatory. But and even without one on the books, Cottleman says, even without an anti-discrimination law on the books, any state that introduces a Religious Freedom Act, which we all were saying here is its purpose is to be discriminatory, the state could argue that it has a compelling interest for equal treatment of its citizens and still limit the power of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So there is a lot of this is still going to be played out.
A lot of it will, Mike. I think that's exactly,
and that's why,
right. We haven't seen the end game in this.
And that's why legislatures are backing off and being really careful with the language.
We're seeing, you know, mostly it's being driven by Christian conservatives, Protestants, but it's also being driven by some conservative Catholics. And this argument is kind of worldwide. There's a big argument in Australia from conservative Catholics claiming they're being discriminated against. According to the Pew Research, and these are great, the countries in the world with the large populous countries with the most discrimination are Iran, Egypt, Indonesia, and Pakistan. They have the most restrictions on religious practice. The countries with the least, we're talking about very large countries, are Brazil, Japan, Italy, South Africa, the UK, and the United States. So we're really on the right end of the spectrum. The thing is it's like a knife that's already pretty sharp. It has to be polished off by making sure that nobody's discriminated against based on law.
One of the things that I found was the Tenenbaum Center for Interreligious Understanding, which is a non-denominational organization that studies religious discrimination. Was founded by a Jewish fellow, found that the group most discriminated against in the United States by far is atheists. And 55% of atheists feel they're discriminated against in the workplace.
Yeah, I don't get that. I have to admit, many things I don't understand in the world, and atheists for centuries now in this country have been...
Well, atheists have not... Well, we should bring in some of the atheist spokesmen and see what they have to say, because they're not being quiet. I mean, right now they're calling them the new atheists. They're actually coming out and saying, I'm an atheist and stuff. Before, I think people just told their friends they were an atheist, or their personal people knew that they weren't religious.
You could be attacked if you told somebody that you were an atheist.
I still think it's probably the worst thing you could be and run for office.
It's impossible. Piece in the Constitution that says there shall be no religious test for a candidate for government office, yet they've done studies that show that no atheist could be elected.
There's a legal test, right, Gary? There could be no legal test. In other words, you know, in a lot of countries, you have to be the official or the dominant religion to even run for office. And here it's banned, but unofficially, people can still discriminate against you, and you still can't run.
Yeah, Mike.
I want to get to stuff on Arizona's version of the Religious Freedom Act. The lady we've had on our show several times, Alessandra Solar of the ACLU, of Arizona, said in a statement that these bills are totally unnecessary. They offer a fix for a non-existent problem. Arizona already has strong laws preventing interference with religious belief and practice. And the Democratic minority leader in the state has said the same thing. Under the Arizona law, in Arizona, the bill being proposed would protect religious from being discriminated against because of their beliefs. But what the legislation actually does, according to the Arizona branch of the Anti-Defamation League, is establish an exemption for businesses to discriminate, not just against gays and lesbians, but for any religious reason whatsoever. Under Arizona's bill, the Anti-Defamation League says, a business owner could refuse to hire someone of a different religion, an employer could refuse to pay men and women an equal wage, a cab driver could refuse a fare to a house of worship different from their own, as long as they say doing so would substantially burden their exercise of religious faith. So these are just some of the ways that the religious freedom law in Arizona could be subverted.
Do we really want endless court cases and suits and countersuits and the kind of conflict this will cause? Because You know, right now we have a fairly peaceful society in terms of religion. I mean, it's a pretty tolerant country.
Compared to the Middle East.
Compared to the Middle East. Or
pretty low bar there,
it's
buddy.
A pretty, you know, yeah. So why would we want to go in the direction of the worst countries in the world for religious freedom? We're on the good end of that spectrum of tolerance,
part
and
of
getting
America.
Along and respecting other people's religion. Why do we want to go the opposite?
Part of America's
direction?
Race to the bottom. You know, we can't get to the bottom fast enough in anything. In education, which we're going to have a show on, and we're going to have a lot of fun with that, because you know American education isn't what you thought it was or what it used to be. But yeah, I think part of that is just that. It's this global trend. And unfortunately, we're jumping on that bandwagon rather than some of the more positive
people
ones.
People throw around the term the American Taliban when they talk about the Christian right.
Yeah.
And it's not an unfounded, you know, kind.
It's not a bad comparison. Well, intolerance in any form, whether it's Christian or Muslim, is difficult.
How do you have a peaceful society, Mike? You have tolerance.
You do what I tell you.
I mean, somebody is, yes, but I always
Simple.
Do that. But how do you have a society that works? And one of the reasons the United States has worked well, except in the area of race, where we had to have a civil war to sort things out, because as we talked about, the Constitution didn't provide a solution. When documents like that fail, it's a really serious fail sometimes. But why would we want to go in a direction that is so counter to our tradition? And I understand that people who are used to seeing and feeling and hearing that Christianity is the dominant religion, or their version of Christianity is the dominant religion. But what you have in human history I believe it was in like Switzerland, and had a tolerant monarch come in, a tolerant prince. And the prince said, you know, you can be Catholic here or you can be Lutheran. But you can't be Calvinist. So the idea is extended.
Christians, they were deists. In other words, they believed in a God, but they didn't believe in Christianity.
And some of them wanted to use religion like the Romans did. The Romans are persecuting Christians way back in the day, not because they care about Christianity one way or the other, but because Christians in the early days wouldn't salute the Roman gods that were part of creating a state. So when the Roman Senate decided somebody was a god or something, they wanted you to genuflect before this thing. You didn't have to believe anything at all. They didn't care what you believe. It was an affirmation of the state. And so this tradition goes down, and some of the founding fathers, like I believe George Washington, favored a sort of religion in that sense. And for example, he decided that, or his position was that you could still collect taxes to support churches, but the money couldn't go to one particular church. It had to go to all of them. Well, you can imagine. I mean, Washington's a great man, but that's a really, really terrible idea, because like, how many churches are there, and how would you distribute the money, and how would you, which caused an absolute nightmare.
Exactly.
And so the best decision was the one that they made, was to get to separate this church and state. And there were, you know, people like Jefferson who believed that the separation should be absolute.
An extremely important provision. I don't believe we'd still be a whole country if we didn't have it. One of the things everybody's heard about, the photographer that refused to shoot the gay wedding. But I'm once again, I'm quoting from another article. This happened in New Mexico. The famous case, gay couple photographer refused to take pictures at a same-sex marriage ceremony, which was not an official ceremony, since same-sex marriage was illegal in New Mexico at the time. The photographer cited the state's religious freedom law as a defense. The state Supreme Court of New Mexico rejected that defense for a specific reason, and this is important. New Mexico's religious freedom law, the
former legislator like Chad
Campbell will be there.
Who's we've had on the show.
The Democratic minority leader of the House businesses from lawsuits by individuals and other private parties. This distinction is huge. And in legal world, it's going to be extremely difficult in practice to make this door. The New Mexico Supreme Court did.
One point we should make, Mike, is that there is no right to force a religion to marry people that it disagrees with.
Right.
Now, you can discriminate against black folks. You can discriminate against anybody you want. You cannot have in your religion a mixed marriage where one person is one face, the other person is the other. You cannot marry gay folks if you don't want to do that.
So we're talking
as a religion.
So we're talking about government actions against
religion. As a religion, you can still legally discriminate in terms of what you're doing.
Absolutely.
As a religious
within
institution,
within that religion,
only as a religious institution. The minute the way the courts seem to be heading is the minute you open your doors for business, I open my door and say, "Come in and buy flowers from me." I'm a commercial enterprise. Once I do that, I'm not protected by being able to discriminate anymore, because I've opened my doors to the public and I'm a commercial outfit. I'm not a religious organization. I don't know of anyone trying to force religions to marry people, right or wrong, whether they're right or wrong, that they don't believe in doing it. I mean, in other words, you know, if your religion X and your church only marries people who belong to religion X, nobody's going to come and force to support intermarriage. That's up to the religion.
That's important.
So nothing is happening with that.
That's
important.
We're talking
about commercial enterprises that open their door to the public. Now, I suppose if you were a private company somewhere, not a private company in the sense of ownership, but in the sense of, I don't know what, Gary, but once you're a public, then there's a problem with discriminating against people.
Yeah, as a business, once a business is allowed to discriminate freely against any group, where does it stop? As Mike pointed out, if these laws like the one in Indiana were allowed to run their course, they could be used against people of color. They could be used if I'm a Republican with a business, I could discriminate against. I could always ask if
no photographing. Democrats' weddings.
I could always ask if.
Or vice versa. I'm a super liberal guy. Somebody comes in, conservative fundamentalists want to get married, and they want me to take the photographs of their ceremony and them for their memories. And I say, I'm sorry, I just don't take pictures of Christian fundamentalists. I'm sorry, it's against my religion. I mean, anything is possible once you open this door, right?
As someone who was raised a Christian, I'm constantly amused by the attitude towards gays, because the verses in Leviticus that they used to justify discriminating against gays also ban the eating of shellfish. They ban the wearing of two different fabrics at the same time. They ban eating the flesh of an animal with cloven hoofs. I mean, they ban divorce. You know, if you get divorced, then you should be stoned.
Well, back to religious freedom.
I think he's right, Mike. I mean, the justifications are taking what did Austin call it?
Highly selective.
Highly selective. He had a particular term from literature.
Proof texting.
Proof texting. So they're going through the whole Bible, and as far as I know, Jesus never said anything about gay marriage or homosexuality or anything at all. St. Paul railed against gays and also against sex in general. But that's another issue.
You mean Saul? Yeah, I want to do we should do a Bible show. I'm ready for the Bible show.
I
am ready for the Bible show.
We were all raised Catholic.
The Council of Nicaea. Oh, yes, exactly.
So if you want to listen to our religious upbringing for 45 minutes,
that library of arbitrarily decided texts that were put together by people with by 40 mostly men, people with political motives. I mean, there is no more political text than the Holy Bible.
I think what you see, folks, is most of the really reactionary stuff comes in when a religion is being threatened. So you'll have periods in medieval Islam where there'll be attacks on Christians and Jews. and they'll be a protected religion, but they'll also be discriminated against. And you're able to practice your religion. In fact, Muslims, there's periods where they would let people eat pork and drink wine. If you were a Christian, you could do all these things. You could celebrate your holidays. But you were also a second-class system and second-class citizen. And what happened is that we don't second-class anybody based on the religion anymore, or we shouldn't, right?
My ancestors were driven out of France and Germany because they were Huguenot and didn't believe or didn't follow the teachings of the Catholic
Church.
Why do you
see that being driven out because of your ancestors?
So they had their land taken away. Many of them were killed, and they were dispersed across Europe and places that the Church couldn't reach.
So when you look at different countries in Southeast Asia, often Muslims are being persecuted, right? And if you look in the Middle East, it's often Shia grouping of Islam that's being persecuted by Sunnis. You get to Iran has theoretical laws, and this is what we see in history. And the great thing about the United States is keeping our laws real so that they actually work. Because if you look at all these countries and the United Nations and the U.S. government analysis of religious freedom in these countries is pretty good. They all have these laws saying there isn't any discrimination, everybody is protected, and they don't enforce it. So in Pakistan, there are these vicious attacks where they've killed hundreds of Shia Muslims, the Sunnis have, and blown up a church or killed almost 90 Christians. So they have the laws, but they're not enforced. And what the United States, it's what's important is that we, through our courts and through our support for our Constitution and for a sense of fairness and justice to everybody and to bring peace for everyone, actually practice these anti-discrimination measures that so much of the world's enacted. I mean, the United Nations has wonderful, wonderful human rights stuff, but all they do is monitor what countries do and criticize them because they have no power to do anything else. Here we have the law to protect us.
What some article, I'm going to quote again from an article. This is a shrinking minority. They want to make an anxious, shrinking minority, but polls show that most Americans support gay marriage and anti-discriminatory laws. The Andrew Cottleman, the John Paul Stevens Professor of Law at Northwestern University, said this: even if the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is on the books, and he's talking about Indiana, a state can still override a religious claim if it has a compelling interest. States, now Indiana doesn't have an anti-discrimination law. A lot of states do. If a state has anti-discrimination laws on the books, that makes the Religious Freedom Restoration Acts more actionable and less discriminatory. But and even without one on the books, Cottleman says, even without an anti-discrimination law on the books, any state that introduces a Religious Freedom Act, which we all were saying here is its purpose is to be discriminatory, the state could argue that it has a compelling interest for equal treatment of its citizens and still limit the power of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So there is a lot of this is still going to be played out.
A lot of it will, Mike. I think that's exactly
and that's why
right. We haven't seen the end game in this.
And that's why legislatures are backing off and being really careful with the language.
We're seeing, mostly it's being driven by Christian conservatives, Protestants, but it's also being driven by some conservative Catholics. And this argument is kind of worldwide. There's a big argument in Australia from conservative Catholics claiming they're being discriminated against. According to the Pew Research, and these are great, the countries in the world with the large populous countries with the most discrimination are Iran, Egypt, Indonesia and Pakistan. They have the most restrictions on religious practice. The countries with the least, we're talking about very large countries, are Brazil, Japan, Italy, South Africa, the UK, and the United States. So we're really on the right end of the spectrum. The thing is it's like a knife that's already pretty sharp. It has to be polished off by making sure that nobody's discriminated against based on law.
One of the things that I found was the Tannenbaum Center for Interreligious Understanding, which is a non-denominational organization that studies religious discrimination. Was founded by a Jewish fellow, found that the group most discriminated against in the United States by far is atheists. And 55% of atheists feel they're discriminated against in the workplace.
Yeah, I don't get that. I have to admit, many things I don't understand in the world, and atheists for centuries now in this country have been...
Well, atheists well, we should bring in some of the atheist spokesmen and see what they have to say, because they're not being quiet. I mean, right now they're calling them the new atheists. They're actually coming out and saying, I'm an atheist and stuff. Before, I think people just told their friends they were an atheist, or their personal people knew that they weren't religious.
You could be attacked if you told somebody that you were an atheist.
I still think it's probably the worst thing you could be and run for office.
It's impossible. Piece in the Constitution that says there shall be no religious test for a candidate for government office, yet they've done studies that show that no atheist could be elected.
There's a legal test, right, Gary? There could be no legal test. In other words, you know, in a lot of countries, you have to be the official or the dominant religion to even run for office. And here it's banned, but unofficially, people can still discriminate against you, and you still can't run.
Yeah,
Mike.
I want to get to stuff on Arizona's version of the Religious Freedom Act. The lady we've had on our show several times, Alessandra Solar of the ACLU, said in a statement that these bills are totally unnecessary. They offer a fix for a non-existent problem. Arizona already has strong laws preventing interference with religious belief and practice. And the Democratic minority leader in the state has said the same thing. Under the Arizona law, in Arizona, the bill being proposed would protect religious from being discriminated against because of their beliefs. But what the legislation actually does, according to the Arizona branch of the Anti-Defamation League, is establish an exemption for businesses to discriminate, not just against gays and lesbians, but for any religious reason whatsoever. Under Arizona's bill, the Anti-Defamation League says, a business owner could refuse to hire someone of a different religion, an employer could refuse to pay men and women an equal wage, a cab driver could refuse a fare to a house of worship different from their own, as long as they say doing so would substantially burden their exercise of religious faith. So these are just some of the ways that the religious freedom law in Arizona could be subverted.
Do we really want endless court cases and suits and countersuits and the kind of conflict this will cause? Because, you know, right now we have a fairly peaceful society in terms of religion. I mean, it's a pretty tolerant country.
Compared to the Middle East.
Compared to the Middle East. Or
pretty low bar there,
it's
buddy.
A pretty, you know, yeah. So why would we want to go in the direction of the worst countries in the world for religious freedom? We're on the good end of that spectrum of tolerance, along and respecting other people's religion. Why do we want to go the opposite?
Part of America's race to the bottom. You know, we can't get to the bottom fast enough in anything. In education, which we're going to have a show on, and we're going to have a lot of fun with that, because you know, American education isn't what you you thought it was or what it used to be. But yeah, I think part of that is just that. It's this global trend. And unfortunately, we're jumping on that bandwagon rather than some of the more positive
people
ones.
People throw around the term the American Taliban when they talk about the Christian right.
Yeah.
And it's not an unfounded, you know, kind
of, it's not a bad comparison. Well, intolerance in any form, whether it's Christian or Muslim, is difficult.
How do you have a peaceful society, Mike? You have tolerance.
You do what I tell you.
I mean, somebody is, yes. Well, I always
Simple.
Do that. But
what Tom says.
How do you have a society that works? And one of the reasons the United States has worked well, except in the area of race, where we had to have a civil war to sort things out, because as we talked about, the Constitution didn't provide a solution. When documents like that fail, it's a really serious fail sometimes. But why would we want to go in a direction that is so counter to our tradition?
Well,
I understand that people who are used to seeing and feeling and hearing that Christianity is the dominant religion, or their version of Christianity is the dominant religion. But what you have in human history is, I believe it was in Switzerland, and had a tolerant monarch come in, a tolerant prince. And the
there
prince
you
said, you know, you can be Catholic here or you can be Lutheran. But you can't be Calvinist. You know? So the idea is extended, you know, I mean, there's tolerance and there's tolerance. And under Islam, there's like three protected religions. The thing is that, you know, it's got to be everybody in.
Heard,
so unless you're sacrificing babies or something,
I heard this
pagans are welcome too.
I heard this the other day, and then we're going to leave our listeners with this conundrum here, that in the United States, we come to consensus on a lot of things. And if we can't come to consensus, we come to consensus on not coming to consensus. In other words, we're okay with not coming to consensus. We're willing to go on day to day.
Quakers say agree to disagree.
Yes. Now, exactly how, but for some reason that seems to be going by the wayside. We're not as agreeable when it comes to not having consensus. For whatever reason, people are finding that a void that must be filled on one side or the other, and that's part of the polarization.
Fear is filling it. Fear and insecurity is fueling this whole...
Well, one thing I'm not afraid of is the Democrats of the Red Rocks, one of our fine, fine sponsors. We want to get them in before the end of our time here. And Democrats of the Verde Valley, such as it exists, although I am seeing new interest on that side of the valley, by the way.
So, it's a presidential election.
Presidential election year.
There's a meeting May 20th at 6
cool
p.m.
Meeting, by the way. Yes.
At 6 p.m. at the Jewish Community Center in Sedona. That is free to the public, and it is about the upcoming presidential election.
And
state elections.
It's a seminar. I mean, there's four or five people talking from different points of view and stuff. Some of them are in the state, legislature and
strategists for the Democratic Party.
Former legislators like
Chad Campbell will be there.
Who's we've had on the show?
The Democratic minority leader of the House, Senate in Arizona, and the minority whip of the House in Arizona.
You don't have to say that. He's a Democrat. They're always a minority.
Well, that's lately. So
you can hear this show and all our shows over the last 4 years on VVID.org. That's VVID.org.
And listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks.